Hey guys, what's going on? This is the Cinepile Podcast, the podcast that talks about films that matter. And this is episode 20, and we are going to be talking about the sci-fi fantasy powerhouse Star Wars.
Cue music.
Roll vertical credits. Yeah, roll vertical credits. And then we get sued by Disney because they now own Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think we should kick it off a little bit here. I wanted to get your hot take. Did you hear about how Disney has now acquired 21st Century Fox?
No, I did not.
Oh,
I saw
yeah,
some
Disney,
headlines.
Yeah, Disney now owns Fox, and people are like, what does this mean for filmmaking? Is this going to kind of create too much of an oligopoly within filmmaking, and we're going to start seeing, like, essentially executive producers sort of start taking over and the squelching of directorial artistry? Or
I don't know,
is
though,
it just kind of be business as normal because people determine the market?
I have mixed feelings about that. So Disney, if they own 21st Century Fox, we've got them owning that. Star Wars, obviously, like all of the Lucas Arts and mm-hmm. Marvel. I haven't seen many of the recent Marvel films, but take, for example, the most recent Thor, which I'll need to look up the actual name, is directed
by... Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok, but specifically the director did a little film called The Hunt for the Winter People that was delightful.
Oh, yeah, The Wilder People, yeah.
Taika
yeah,
no, same... Waititi?
Okay.
And so here's yeah. like an up-and-coming, I mean, you could call him an independent talent. Mm-hmm. And they're giving him a shot at this huge tentpole film. Gareth Edwards had done like Godzilla and the Monsters movie, and they gave him a Star Wars film. I don't know
yeah,
if it's...
It almost feels
like maybe... The reason I guess I have mixed feelings about it is because what would they be doing otherwise? Would they be doing more creative work out there? And are they really just like co-opting or recruiting this young talent and like making them a part of this monster?
See, mine is kind of the same. It's a little bit more insidious. It's just like, hey, here's a director who knows how to talk to actors, who knows how to edit this and that, you know, obviously has a good eye, but he's new and doesn't have opinions and would love to have $50 million put in his pocket. Like,
well,
let's
go
ahead.
Well, that's not just insidious, but maybe a little insulting to these guys as well.
Well, it's just, I don't know, like, when I watched The Last Jedi, I didn't see anything that was really Rainn Wilson. Well,
Rian Johnson?
Rian Johnson.
Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Wilson. Rian Johnson, yeah. Like, I listened to a whole interview with him, and they were talking about, like, his unique, you know, bringing to everything else for the film. And I didn't really see anything that was, like, terribly, you know, artorial, like, you know, Artor, like, you know, Rian Johnson-esque kind of thing. Like, and, like, I feel like Star Wars is just so much of a product that mm-hmm. it has so much money in it, and it has so much CGI in it that it just, like, you can't have inconsistency based off of directors. And so it's just kind of, I feel like so much of it is moot. Like, I would love to just sit there with the actual director and he'd be like, oh yeah, you see this? Like, this is what the studio wanted to get rid of, and I handled it. Because even some of the acting, like, just to kind of already sort of get into it, like, it almost like seemed like kind of slapsticky pandering, like out of character for a lot of them at the very beginning. And you're like, okay, let's just talk about the very beginning where
are you meaning in a, like a self-referential kind of way? Like, oh, we're in Star Wars, we're kind of laughing about it. And
No, not that really. It's just like, I feel like all the other, like Star Wars, the prequels kind of brought the more kidsy aspect to Star Wars. Like, you know, we saw that with Jar Jar Binks and all that kind of stuff, but it still had a tone of seriousness. Like, you know, there was like, you know, child murder and like was actually dealing with a lot of adult themes and everything. And the first like 15 minutes of the film felt like I was watching Spaceballs and not Star Wars. Because he's just like, hey, General. And it's just like, what? And he's like, I'll hold. And just like this stupid joke, and it's like not funny, and it was like this, like it just felt like that was for like all the, I mean, granted, it's for all the 8-year-olds, I guess, in the crowd, but that's what's great about Star Wars, is it's not a kid's movie. And like that part like really annoyed me. I was like, oh shit, like I hope this isn't gonna be like Disney starring Star Wars kind of film. And then like from the beginning it kind of had that feel, but I feel like it did pick up and get kind of walk away from that. But just like some sentences from like Luke Skywalker, to where like he would just be like campy and funny, to where he'd be like, wait, what do you mean? Like it just seemed like too modern of humor and everything like that, and just completely would take me out of the film because it wasn't humor within their kind of like mm-hmm. pantheon.
Well,
usually Star, yeah.
Let's speak to the audience at home a little bit here, to those of you out there listening. I hope you've seen Star Wars The Last Jedi. Not necessarily because I'm endorsing the film yet. We'll hear about our opinions later. But be warned, there will be spoilers ahead. This is not a spoiler-free episode.
We should probably give a heads up on that. Yeah. I just kind of tore after it.
Well, thankfully you were talking about the beginning, but yeah. This is not going to be spoiler-free. We've got to discuss some plot points and whatnot to get into, whether it's our criticism or our praise of the film. And I think you touched on something, Cooper, and a lot of people will probably criticize this film and all of the other Star Wars for being products. This definitely feels like a bit of a product instead of a hero's journey to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like similar to Rogue One. Rogue One was really, really great. Like Rogue One, I felt like if they would have taken that kind of style and applied it to The Last Jedi, it would have been really great, because Rogue One was very adult, but it had good kidsy kind of quality to it, and it had the camp that was sensible within the Star Wars like canon. But like when I was just kind of watching The Last Jedi, I just didn't really understand some of the choices that they made. And like where Rogue One had such a large like cast, and like that ensemble kind of almost made the film collapse because there was such a large cast.
Well, it was spread so thin, and so there were people that you liked, but you didn't have anything more than a surface level understanding of their character.
Exactly that. So,
and not to mention Rogue One made some huge blunders in storytelling, I feel like.
Yeah.
This film, Star Wars The Last Jedi, I think handles much better.
Yeah, I think it handled the story, but like, so I just want to kind of jump a little bit into the future if I can with it. Cause I feel like this is just the one of the better examples. So when the main battlecruiser captain is sitting there just idly in her battlecruiser watching all the other transport ships slowly get blown up by the dreadnought, the entire time I was like, why is she has her shields still active. Why is she not flying in the path of those cannons to do anything about it? And like, or like, what is she contemplating? And then like finally she's like, oh, I'm gonna turn my ship around and kamikaze at light speed after they've destroyed like more than half of the Rebel Alliance. And I hated that, because if you kept the camera on her, it would literally just be her sitting looking out the window watching people get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my big problem with it, is that there was a lot of just nothing happening, and it was the camera just bouncing around to all these different narratives. And so to kind of get to my point before I start doing my Cooperness and meandering too much, that if she would have been on the ship and it justified why it took her so long to get to it, like being injured and crawling to get to it, and create a conflict of her getting to it. So all the cut scenes of her just looking at the window in horror at the ship's being blown up, if she's actually struggling to get to the captain's chair, to turn the entire ship around, to actually sacrifice herself with a bunch of fire and damage on the bridge to make it more dramatic, they just like completely took all the seasoning out of that. And I think that happened kind of consistently with this movie.
Well,
thoughts?
I think that might be a symptom of overextending the film. And there are so many, there's usually at least three different conflicts happening at any time. Some of them seem really arbitrary and don't end up amounting to that much.
Right.
And I think if I were to go with my biggest criticism of the film, and it's a question I have for many other blockbusters like this, the original cut of the film was over 3 hours. And I want to say the script was almost like 150 pages. Now, we all know they're not going to have a 3-hour film. But so what happens is they end up cutting the tail ends of the heads and the tails of all these scenes and bringing them down to the bare minimum. And the pace was just ridiculous to me. I didn't have a moment to breathe. You're cutting, and to go to this point, your point, Cooper, you're cutting back forward from montages or moments of them on the ship, something happening on a different planet, the Imperial ship, the person watching the ships getting destroyed. It's like spread out over all this space and all these goings on that it's like, if they were to add what you're talking about, it would just be like more plot for the sake of plot. And this film was almost all plot. There were some really great moments, and I enjoyed myself. I was on the edge of my seat for some of it. But at the same time, it's like there was no time for anybody to really have a regular conversation.
Yeah, like it didn't have space for the characters to breathe.
Yeah, for us to breathe, the audience to breathe, to see any of Rey's real training. Like, when you think about Empire Strikes Back, which is kind of the film that this one's going to get compared to, like the gigantic climactic finale of the film, Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader, you didn't really have to cross cut from that.
Yeah.
It was just a moment. It was two characters, emotional, physical conflict, huge story realizations, the continuation of the hero's journey. It's like, it's almost like they're compensating by having so much going on to say that we don't really have a mythos this time.
Well, in a lot of stuff, like a lot of the conflicts didn't really feel like conflicts. They felt like speed bumps or like minor debris to swerve around. So for example, for Finn fighting his like previous like overseer, the Chrome stormtrooper, that was such a quick and succinct little battle that could have, like, it didn't grow the character at all. He just got rid of that person, so you could be like, yeah, got rid of that person. But it wasn't like how that person got killed. It wasn't that person, you know, like, imagine if instead of that stormtrooper falling into the pit, he grabbed her. And while he was falling, he made the conscious choice of either trying to save her or pull or like let her go.
Yeah, something that, you know, moves these, like, characters along.
Yeah, yeah. Something that, like, plot should develop your characters, but conflict should mostly develop your characters. And it was the exact opposite. It was just like, all right, what's next? What's next? Come on. You know, push it down the gangpipe. I mean, it was still like visually stunning. It was still like really fun, but just like, I don't know. And I want to put BB-8 in a fucking smelting pot. I don't like that droid.
I love BB-8.
I know everyone loves BB-8.
But okay, so we're kind of ragging pretty hard.
Yeah,
it's enjoyable. Maybe we strike some of the positive notes. It is enjoyable. Yeah. There's some great tension. The visuals and the design are spot on. Obviously, they hire the best people for these things. Like the design, especially of Snoke's chamber.
I love his henchmen. The Snoke chamber. That was really great.
That was so cool. And that itself could have been the climax of the film. Yeah. I think that would have been more appropriate in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And then to speak to Snoke's chamber, I had a question for you. You think all of the bodyguards were the fallen Jedi that left with him?
That is a good question.
Because Luke said to Rey that he took some of the Jedi, which was, I felt, kind of a parable to the devil, to where, like, you know, these angels fell to hell and whatnot, but these fallen angels, and then he had these very skilled fighters who were all in red and everything like that. And I was like, I wonder if these are like fallen Jedi kind of thing that didn't get to get full Jedi training and whatnot, because The one thing that I did have with that scene is, again, like, Kylo Ren, most powerful user of the Force that pretty much has existed, with like just raw physical power, didn't use his Force. Like, literally could have just been like, I'm gonna collapse all you guys and crush you. Nah, I'm gonna fight you with a lightsaber instead.
Well, also, if they were his fellow Jedi who he brought with him, he killed him pretty casually.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought, but I don't know. Maybe that was an idea they had at a different time. Maybe that's not the case at all.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in this movie. It could have easily been two films. They jam-pack it full of stuff. And I'm wondering. I mean, I just don't like that pace. I don't like it.
Well, see, this is what I feel like is they got way too married to the pursuit of the battle cruiser, I feel like, and it became a meanwhile back at the ranch kind of scene that would usually deliver nothing, would let you just see Oscar Isaac's face doing things, and really it didn't make sense. Because I mean, it doesn't make any like this is the logic issue that I'm talking about. Is Kylo Ren goes off to attack the battle cruisers, right? They start getting too far ahead, and they're like, "Hey, bro, you got to pull back, otherwise we can't cover you." And it's like, okay, I can understand that. That's Kylo Ren. He's a lead general. However, what are the two things about like the Empire? They're uncaring, and they have gobs and gobs and gobs of people. It's like, so here's the Rebel Alliance. That's it, right there in front of you. You have a dreadnought class fighter behind him with other Empire battle cruisers, and you don't want to scramble your fighters in case some of them get blown up because you can't cover them. Like, I wish if they would have literally just said, like, we'll have these, like, make sure to leave one alive or the one ship that we're tracking alive. So that way we can track them to their last place to truly crush them. Like, give me a reason why you're not using your full force. Because they could have scrambled all their TIE fighters, which would have been, I would assume, into the thousands. Kylo Ren had already destroyed their fighter bay, so they couldn't even launch fighters at that point, and completely annihilate the Rebel Alliance in one foul swoop within the same scene. And so, like, that's why, like, when it was like, meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm like, oh, this super protected and padded scene where just logic doesn't make sense, where we can light speed stop within inches of one another in a flotilla, but for some reason we can't light speed away and then light speed back and be inches from these people. Like, why are we on impulse
I don't
right
know.
now?
That's all plot, and Star Wars isn't a science fiction film per se, if we were to discuss genre. It's
Yeah.
just excuses for the story, which usually are completely forgivable. Well, not usually, but they are forgivable if there's something to the characters that is engaging you, some sort of journey. I actually like Poe's failed mutiny, that whole storyline,
Yeah.
and the how they actually fail to break into the thing. Like, I thought the film did a good job of making things difficult for people. I just wish it had done like half of the plot.
Yeah.
Like, you only have to make things difficult for us once or twice and make it important. And just then give us a little bit more space for, like, Finn, like you were saying, to take on his old boss. What if he'd have saved her
Yeah, exactly.
instead of killing her? Because he
Yeah, it's like
basically
what?
killed her, but they took away that moral decision for him.
Yeah, they exactly that, where it's just like they kept his hands just super squeaky clean. And I mean, I get it, it's Star Wars, but let's just say, like, it just gives you more to work with. If he did save her, what does that mean for her character? What does that mean about his character? Is she gonna come to the light side and maybe help them out later down the date? Kind of thing. Or he kills her, and that's something that forever haunts him and messes with his mind, and he's fully regretful of. And it's like maybe his first time he's been regretful of killing someone since he was a trooper slave in a way. And so, like, again, like, it was just, it didn't have as much balls or as much daring as I wished it would have, but I think again, because it's the problem of the product problem.
Yeah, you can't upset anybody with the product, and it can't be too difficult to digest. You know, nobody really made any compromising decisions there, except for that's why I like Poe's mutiny, because that whole decision thing, I wish that had actually been a little more serious. Because that's a big thing, to stage a mutiny, to take control of the entire Rebel Alliance. And it felt like just a little tiny piece of the plot instead of something that, I don't know, really changed anything.
Yeah, it was it's kind of like how there's violence for the sake of violence. It was just like minor conflict for the sake of minor conflict. But kind of hearkening back to what I would like to see more of is honestly, I would have liked to see more of Finn and Rose's journey, because when they went to the whole casino planet and everything like that, they pretty much just went there to learn the hard truth that the galaxy's complicated. I really wish we could have spent more time in that casino, because I thought that was an awesome shot. And this is what I was thinking, that Rian Johnson did an homage opening shot. I can't remember. It's like an old black and white film where the camera flies through a hotel lobby, like over all of these tables. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the hotel lobby, but I know in M they do something like that, and I think it's even in a gambling den where the camera goes through the window and then over tables and they like pull people aside.
It's exactly that. So I feel like that was an homage shot, which I was just like, okay, cool. Like there's a director. Like I saw it and I really really liked it, and I really liked the whole casino area and everything like that. Like I love the conflict that was on there. I loved how there's a lot of like little subplots, and they're like, hey, this is like, we're spreading the idea of the rebellion to, this little kid, and we're saving the animals and stuff like that, which didn't make the most sense to me. But it was very interesting, and it was filled with betrayal. And so it was like, okay, there's a complicated, fun plot point. Like I liked Finn's journey that he went on. But yeah, I wish Rose would have died, but
No,
instead of
I
she
like
got.
Rose. I
I
wasn't ready
like
for her to
Rose,
die. I did think that
but
Finn was going
I
to
don't know.
die.
Oh
I
yeah,
really thought
I
that he was going to die, and I appreciate that.
yeah I was just like, really? And I was just like, dang. I was like, Disney's getting bold. I was gonna kill like this main character moneymaker, and then even like how he got saved, it made sense to the film and everything like that. So it wasn't like saving the main character because he has plot armor. It was saving the main character because of he's developed relationships, which I thought that was really solid. I thought that was actually very, very good.
Well, yeah, that whole sequence is beautiful. The salt and the red underneath it, the crystal critters, all of it, like when Luke Skywalker steps out, like, ugh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I thought it was great. One thing I would have loved to have seen would have been an aerial shot of Kylo Ren and Luke Skywalker fighting, and just like these big, like, just like, if like right when they run toward each other, I'm thinking more Dragon Ball Z kind of level,
No, but I got you. Like
more
the
Phantom Menace. Yeah, to where it shows like the concussive like triangle, like of their like foot like moving, to you can see the force and strength that these guys have, because when two Jedis fight, you don't really get that sense. In these movies, at least, prequels, you kind of did more so. But to where it's like, when he stops, or if like if they both force pushed, let's say at the same time, and it just went, and it was just like, shot out this like really wide line
Oh,
on the
Cooper.
sand, and what? I wanted Michael Bay to direct that one Jedi fight.
Yeah,
Is that so
indeed.
hard?
Okay, well, this brings us to Luke Skywalker
Yeah, let's talk
and
about
the
Luke's journey a little bit.
wonderful Mark Hamill. And one of my favorite scenes in the film, the scene with Yoda.
That was touching.
It was so touching and meaningful. and, yeah, and beautifully shot, well, and just those two, the actor, like, it just, it brought the child out in me,
mm-hmm.
and it taught me a little something.
Yeah.
Does not matter.
Well, and I thought it was even kind of clever, too, because it was, like, once again, as you see later, like, Yoda being clever, too. He's like, hey, Brad, like, it was just a test. Like, those books weren't in there anyway, even to burn, because Rey had already snagged him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I really like that. And even the CGI and puppetry, because it looked more puppet.
It was puppet.
It looked like, yeah, it looked like a puppet with maybe CGI embellishments, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, it looked, it was the Yoda we knew from the originals.
Exactly, yeah.
And not only that, but what he was saying and his sense of humor fit mm-hmm. with Yoda perfectly. It was just this beautiful blast from the past. And, yeah.
Well, it made me feel like I was kind of being too hard on the film, too. Because some of it, you just have to just learn to enjoy something. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like learn to enjoy the read. Like, you don't have to be super focused on grammar and perfect punctuation and then blah, 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 blah. So, like, same thing with, like, sometimes with watching movies. It's sometimes hard to turn off, like, my critical bit and just, you know, just enjoy it for the sake of enjoyment. Because, like, when Yoda started laughing, like, all crazily, like, I was like, that is actually really weird how he laughs and everything. And it's kind of jarring. And I was like, I wonder how I would have felt if I saw, like, you know, old school puppet Yoda just being, like, on Luke Skywalker's back, just going, like, ha, 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 ha. Like, I would have just, you know, been like, what? They're not taking Star Wars seriously, man. Which, I like, that part was just like, hey, like, you can still be a kid on the inside, which I feel like even the final message of the movie was with the whole broomstick and everything like that, and the kid holding like the lightsaber broom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some high moments in this film, and I felt like a kid again at times. I felt like a kid
mm-hmm.
most on the island when we're discussing Rhea and the training, and then the scene with Luke and Yoda. And then at the finale, as well as Snoke's chamber, there were some really good highlights, I think. But they mm-hmm. were just squished. They were squeezed by all this plot.
Yeah. It honestly just would have been nice to have, like, a wide, locked-off shot in, like, the ancient Jedi temple with Rey and Luke just sitting there just like, now reach out with your feelings and, you know, kind of guiding her through meditation and you know, something that is still, something that's calming. But it was, like, in these calm, beautiful shots, they were, you know, jumping around. And I was just like, the editing
mm-hmm.
The editing never really matched the mood, in my opinion. The editing,
well, I don't know if it was able to. It served the plot and served what the audience needed to see. And sometimes it was fun. Sometimes it was intense. But at the same time, their hands are tied sometimes when you have to squeeze in so much to a 2.5 hour running time. You know, think about it. If the script was as plot filled, still at over 3 hours, and they're telling you to cut 40 minutes from it. I don't know how long mm-hmm. the original cut was, 50 minutes from it. It's like you're squeezing so much. And yeah. I don't know, at a certain point, your hands are tied. But the pacing, especially in the beginning, did not work for me. I kind of, if I were to have opened the film, you know, since Disney and everybody, our audience is asking me, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to just pick up right where we left off with the last one and give us like 30 minutes of the island. You know, I don't even need to worry about the rest of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that because the island, that brings me to another thing I really loved about the film, the animals.
Yeah.
It felt like it was a diverse,
biological
deal going on everywhere you went.
Yeah, I like the animals. Like, that seemed to be a specific plot, was, like, the animals and freedom of the animals. And there was this very, like, nature versus technology kind of feel that I think that they're going for, that they did really well. I wasn't the biggest fan of the owl things because, I don't know. Those I just felt those was a bunch of tiny little Jar Jar Binkses that just didn't have talking roles.
No.
Because there's like, here's They're something like that's Ewoks. Cute. Yeah. I don't know. It would have been funny if they made him more vicious.
Like that, but they had a vicious edge. Maybe that'll come out.
Yeah, towards like know. They can open their mouth like five times their size. It's like, and then, yeah, exactly. Like, I would have loved it if it would have picked up exactly from where it started. You know, very, very quiet. It would have set the mood and the excitement for it all. It would have made you like hanging on every single word that Luke Skywalker had. And so when he's like, yeah, I'm not training you.
Mm-hmm. Like, and he throws the lightsaber over his shoulder. Like, imagine that opening instead of this huge galactic battle. Because I understand establishing her sister, Rose's sister's sacrifice. I just don't know if that was the first thing we needed.
No.
You know, and like, even that, the whole thing was a little overblown. It's kind of like, where do you go from here in a way? Because you're opening us up with this huge space battle.
Well, and not to mention that, so there's these like three parts of the film, and it's when they ask, well, where's Rey? And he's like, I just want to know where Rey is. And it's like, here you go. And it's like, ba-doom. And it's just like, I just want to know where such and such is. And ba-doom, there you go. Which, they could have done that in such a more subtle way. Let's say, you know, like I really liked your idea with it starting out with the opening of that. And then when he's like, now open your feelings. And through her, like, maybe Luke Skywalker starts feeling something, like, starts reconnecting him to the Force. And so she feels him close himself off. But in that moment, he feels Leia. And Leia feels him. And he's like, just, Leia? And then it goes to Leia, and you can see what Leia's up to.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Simple as that.
Yeah. And it gives the film focus. I think the film needed a little bit more focus. We've got this big cast now, and we love everybody, and everybody wants them to have perhaps equal screen time or more value put into them, but I don't know if it was justified for everybody, and I think Rey kind of got left behind in a little bit of a way, even though her scenes with Kylo were really cool, where they're having a dialogue in two different places. Those were the only real conversations that stand out to me.
Well, and she didn't even feel like a main character at times. She just felt like a side character. Like, everyone pretty much just felt like side characters, except for, like, maybe Luke Skywalker, but
even that, I don't know. Everybody was a side character.
Yeah, everyone was a side character. The main character was the plot.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay.
But part of that comes from being a franchise, and it was in a way the same problem or a similar problem I had to the Blade Runner film, because if I were to recut that film, I would just cut out every scene except for maybe one or two with the villain, the female villain in Blade Runner that does not have Ryan Gosling, because it's like, here's your point of view, here's your central character, it's a noir story, we're with this guy almost 100%, we don't need to franchise Jared Leto's villain or any of that. And for this, it's like, I could have just been with Rey and then give me side characters in a way.
Yeah, well, and I think also as far as just building is, In the last podcast, I talked about just character building that I did, the little solo one that I was telling you about, that if you don't give main characters side characters to play off of, neither the side characters nor the main characters are going to grow. And so, like, that's kind of has, you know, your issues there. Because the biggest growth, I think, was, like, maybe with Finn.
No.
And Kylo, like... Finn, I don't know. Finn, yeah, I guess Finn was Finn. I felt like the Rose and that kind of thing, like, was maybe his growth. But I guess, like, Kylo probably grew a little bit. I'm still hoping for this, though. Still hoping for that Kylo-Rey crossover. I'm calling it. I want it to happen.
What do you mean crossover? So
they're both the same size of the coin. And the fact that Rey is a lot of light with a little bit of dark, and Kylo is a lot of dark with a little bit of light. And I'm kind of hoping that in trying to, I don't know, save one another or something like that, I was hoping that they were going to crisscross,
mm-hmm.
and that Kylo eventually was going to become fully redeemed, and Rey would have fallen, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, just kind of a difference. But again, that would be really risky, because Kylo's so easy of a product as a bad guy that they're like, well, why don't they just both become on the light side? And I'm like, ah, that's not fun.
Yeah, but they don't. I thought.
Yeah, but they don't.
But here's a question, okay?
Shoot.
This is a question I have for you and for the film in general, for the future of these films. Part of the brilliance of the original Star Wars was the use of the hero's journey for a film. These kind of archetypal story types and characters who are all revolving around the central hero. And I understand that maybe that's a little easy to predict now, that you need to surprise audiences, but what are we looking at here? What mythos, what are we doing with these new ones where we can put ourselves into the character and see something of a journey? Is it more of our modern world where it's all just confusion and war and there's no black and white? It's not that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they hint at that a little bit with like the weapons manufacturers making it for both the Rebel and the Imperial, but it's not that. I mean, we know that this is black and white, Rebels, Imperial, good and bad.
Well, but see, that's what I'm thinking is kind of maybe what they're moving away from, because kind of to go back to the casino thing, they were showing like, hey, like, war isn't about good guys or bad guys, it's about money. And then you go to Kylo and Rey, who were traditionally from this dark side and light side kind of thing. It's just like, well, they're both gray, in all honesty. And so, like, maybe it's more so moving away from, you know, absolutism into more like relativism in that kind of discussion.
Yeah, but do you think so, really? Like, it feels like a very shallow impersonation of that to me. Because at the end of the day, it's still very clear who's wrong and who's right. There's no ambiguity that the Imperial Army is just trying to do evil.
Well, they're really organized. That's a positive character trait.
They've got a plan. Hey, they've got a 16-month and a 24-month budget plan. They've got their to-do list, their bullet journal all ready to go. They're organized.
Yeah. If Excel was a villain, it would be the Empire.
So here's... I read Richard Brody, who I sometimes agree with from The New Yorker. He ended his review of The Last Jedi with this kind of like cute quote, but I think it's kind of going to what I'm getting at. It says, The Last Jedi is a story about the resistance, but the film itself is a cinematic masterwork of the First Order. The First Order being the Imperial Army.
Right.
What do you think about that? Because in a way, it's like this product, the film is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're not really changing anything. We were talking about how they make numerous safe decisions for the characters. You have chances for moral ambiguity. And I'm not saying I need moral ambiguity, but it's almost like they're hinting at it without actually going there.
I can understand that. I could see that.
So I don't know. I guess we're just adults now, and it's like, you got to pick a route. We can have this heartwarming, childish fair. And I don't mean childish in a bad way, but in a good way where it makes me feel like a kid again and it awakens that sense of adventure. Or something that reminds us that the world isn't black and white, which is not heartwarming, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's still hope, but it's not like you have, it doesn't awaken this sense of adventure in you to know that everything's complicated and everything's gray.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it kind of, they were trying to get away from the, you know, firing from the hip, you know, freestyle of everything. Like, oh yeah, it's all good. It's just like, yeah, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? But I mean, if that's what they're going with, that'd be cool. Because I don't know. Like, I really liked what they did, but I mean, I would love to see the 3-hour cut and see like what they settled on more, like what they kind of, were able to sit back and enjoy.
Well, I'm sure
But I
there's
mean, overall,
numerous
yeah,
beautiful
I thought it was
shots that
good.
they let breathe in the longer cut. And I think actually that, like, even though J.J. Abrams' film was almost like this, how we talked about, like, a carbon copy of A New Hope, I think it had a lot more focus.
I could see that. Because I mean, it was certainly trying to accomplish something and trying to move towards something, like, and I think it just did it too quickly. But everything that you saw was pretty solid and relevant. Like, I would say the only like random really bit of fluff was those foxes. Like, I think the foxes were like the quintessential definition of what happens when you have a lot of budget. To where, well, why did those foxes
Are
exist?
you talking about the
One,
crystal critters?
the crystal critters.
Because
The
they were
crystal.
there to lead them out. That was
I
like
know, no,
their.
no, no. I know, but like, I was like, this is the quintessential, like, you have too much money kind of thing. To where it's just like, they could have just been like, oh, hey, you feel that? Now that they blew a hole through the front door,
There's
I
a
can
breeze.
feel,
Yeah.
yeah, I can feel a little breeze. Here, light that flare. Like old school Star Wars, I feel like that was working on a budget Star Wars would have more so done that. This is just like, how much money is it going to cost to CGI a bunch of crystal critters? It's like about $1 million. Do it. We got Disney money. And it's like, and it's like, and then we can sell crystal critter toys. And it's like, I just felt like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I hear you. I think animals like that are absolutely adorable, and I thought it kind of went with the animal theme of the film, if you would call it a theme, or just like this pattern where every planet, in addition to having its unique climate or unique landscape, has some sort of biology going there, some sort of animal life. But yeah, there's a little bit of that charm missing. And honestly, some of the CGI in the film was a little lackluster. I feel like they overextended themselves a little bit.
Yeah, I forgot what scene did have kind of meh CGI. I was
Well, the
trying to think
rocks at
about.
the end for me did not look.
Oh, I so okay. See, so I feel like some of the things that I saw that were CGI that were kind of crappy. I think they were crappy CGI, maybe because they were more so polished, or that way because of 3D. So like there were 3D elements that were kind of put in there to be there. And anytime that I've noticed that like 3D elements get added, it's usually after everything. They're like, okay, cool, we can throw in this for 3D, or we can do this for 3D, or oh, hey, let's get the 3D shot. And I feel like whoever the 3D studio must be, it must be some other like different kind of compositors or post people, because usually 3D elements are always kind of meh. So in respect to what's that movie, Mad Max. So Mad Max, the very end, when all the speakers
Yeah,
like come at your
and the
face,
guitar.
those were that was all garbage CGI, not realistic at all. Whereas like completely on the other end, when like Princess Leia is floating in space with all the debris and like ice crystals and everything like that, like absolutely magnificent CGI. And let's talk about that was actually a great twist
Yeah,
with
having her
her
force pull
being
herself back and protect herself.
yeah. I was like, when'd you learn how to use the Force?
Yeah, that was
But
pretty epic. I think they did like the so to compare it to the moment with Finn, like you legitimately think these characters are going to die, and they pulled them out of it in something that to me didn't feel too cheap.
I think that they did a good job in not like saving people in ridiculous kinds of ways. But yeah, I think like just some of the I did like the fact that they did put a lot of puppets and everything in there. Like in the casino scene, you could see that there's definite puppets in there. Yeah, I think they kind of fumbled a little bit with some of that CGI, but
I think that's just
again,
what happens when it's so extended. I would have loved to have seen a like 120-page draft of this script where like get rid of all the fluff and bring it down to the bare essentials for the characters, not for the plot, but for the journey.
what would be some stuff that you would think could kind of go by the wayside? Well, like just kind of off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, I like the casino planet, but the gigantic chase out of the casino with the animals could have easily been a silent escape. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they could have had one animal that they escaped on and it would have been much more intimate and then say goodbye to that animal. Like there were a lot of set pieces that were huge.
I didn't even think about that. That would have been great.
They were huge for the sake of being huge because it's this tentpole product that it's like, you've got to go big or go home, right? The audience wants huge chases and all this, but at the end of the day, it's all just flashing lights. Not all of the film, but moments like that, I think.
Well, because here's even the more like stupid part was like, after I saw the escape of those, I forgot the name of them, but the giant eared llama things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, was it worth it? And then she like takes the saddle off of like that one and like lets it go free. And she's like, yeah, now it was worth it. I was like, they have spaceships. And I was like, you think they're not going to go capture those things again?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they are, it's a gambling planet with spaceships that use these things to gamble. Like they're going to recapture them. So and I didn't like that.
It's like they want to, everything wants to be tied up quickly, right? Because it's like throwaway planets in a way. What if we were to return to this planet? Kind of like the hobbits returning to the Shire and like actually make a difference here. Because they're just going to rebuild all this. You didn't actually change anything. You just did some damage, had some special effects, and now we're on to the next plot point.
Yeah, if they would have like kind of revealed, let's say, like a usurped or, you know, the populace of the miners that they were talking about, like how Rose grew up as like one of the miners like on that planet, and she was like, yeah, these people are garbage. I was like, okay, great. Let's see some of those miners. Like, let's see, you know, in this stampede, something happens to destroy, you know, a whole bunch of ships or something like that to, like, leave these people defenseless. And the miners see that opportunity, and they're like, we can go tonight. And like, you know, there's a whole other rebel faction that you didn't even see. And you just see them, like, running to the casino, like, you know, storming it. And, like, and that's just an after, like, you know, spaceship banks, you see like blaster fire going back and like, you know, Rose can just be like, they finally rose up. Oh, hey, Rose. But
but even that is so much and it's too quick. You know, if maybe what you're talking about happens in the next film, because with in my mind what storytelling is you're planting these seeds. They don't all just grow up immediately.
No, this is Miracle-Grow. This is the Miracle-Grow of cinema.
Apparently, because it all happens so quickly, problems are solved or stepped over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that world and everything happening there, I don't know. Looking at, say, episode 2, which was my favorite of the prequels, you had like this noir detective story with Obi-Wan going to different planets. And even then, it felt less rushed. He could go to two different planets or three. I can't remember how many he goes to in that film. But because it's not all just nonstop action and plot, to me it felt like, I don't know, it just felt more complete in a way.
No, for sure. Because I think what you're saying is just like, kind of like to relate it to food, is that you can't just have something just be just sweet and then just be like, oh, well, let's make it really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's make it really, really, really sweet. And it's like, okay, man, like, but I like salty. And I like savory, and I want them all to play together.
And you can't rush a dish like that.
No, you just can't.
You
have several courses.
But so what would you... Oh, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say this was like the Blooming Onion of movies.
Which we all love Blooming Onions. But...
Everybody likes it. Everybody will eat it. And at the very end, just go, ah, what was that?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's... What's our final word on this here?
I would say out of... It was certainly better than the last Star Wars. It was certainly better than A New Hope 2.0, The Force Awakens. I would have it land maybe at a 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5. Like just using like the strictness of, hey, a 5 is an average entertaining film. I think it's an average entertaining film that did some cool stuff and I applaud them for it. But just like, I just have so many films that I have as sixes that are, of solid directing that I just can only move it a peg above average.
Yeah, I'd probably lean a little bit closer to six at times. For me, like the Yoda scene puts it at a six. But then there's the casino runaway scene that brings it down to like a four. And then maybe there's the set piece with Snoke that takes a, it's like this up and down. They jam so much in there. They throw it all at the wall and see what sticks. And a good amount of it sticks. But I don't know if I can commend that strategy. So I'll side with you, like a 5-5. It's definitely worth seeing. I hope Mr. Abrams can focus it a little bit more for the final one.
Well, I think what they just really need to do is just like have us on set to tell them how to make movies,
Yeah,
and
because,
they sh and they should make better movies.
yeah. Oh, yeah.
that's the dream. It's like, hi, what are you? I'm a snob. You're a snob consultant? Yes. Hi.
I'm a fan nerd,
I'm a
and
fan
I'm gonna
nerd.
judge everything you do to the
Yeah, that
highest
would be the dream.
standards.
Could you imagine just to be a fan nerd and also be an executive producer? And you're just like, hey, instead of doing that, how about we have like more of a camera, like kind of a twist, like more so reminiscent of like Infomurder? And they're just like, what? But I don't know. I'm hoping that as time goes on and as, because th this is my hope, my a new hope, if you will,
I will.
that as this movie becomes, or as the franchise becomes more and more of a product, it kind of becomes less and less important to itself. I think we're going to see the most, like Allison, my girlfriend, was saying, like Rogue One could take such risks because it's not really canon. It was the first branch of the Star Wars tree. And now we're going to have the new Han Solo movie coming out, and that's going to be another branch of creativity. And so if people start gravitating to these more creative ventures and really doing that, like they would have to force the main canon and these main product films to be more adventurous and more risk-taking, like these branched films that we are currently seeing, like Rogue One and Han Solo.
Yeah. I've got some mixed feelings about that too. And I have a feeling that pretty soon it's going to get to the point where, just like with the Marvel films, I can't help but tune it all out, and they're going to
I
kind of
think
take
Star Wars is
away.
just going to become a watered down thing,
Yeah, they'll take a
which
little bit away from what's special, and I think they'll be less interested in any sort, like, 'cause to me it's just all about the journey and the archetypes and trying to get back to something that's almost legendary. And I feel like it's just going to turn into an endless stream of almost comic book like plots and world building instead of
Quick movie turnaround, big explosions, instead of the more like Lawrence of Arabia kind of
Yeah,
approach.
indeed. So, but anywho, I'll watch the next
Anywho.
one at the very least.
And then oh yeah, and then if anyone was curious where Neil is currently resting because he's been working like 15, 16 hours, if not more, a day doing a lot of color correcting and being a total badass. So he's snoozing away, and sadly he didn't have the chance to see Star Wars in time for this episode. So if anybody was wondering where Neil is, he's dead. Dead asleep, that is. Oh, hey now. I think that's a
Calm
sign
down
that the
there.
podcast is coming to a close. Cooper starts making jokes.
Well, yeah, it was good talking with you about it,
Yeah.
Cooper.
For
I
sure.
think it might still be snowing outside here in Prague. And yeah.
Yeah, sun should be setting there in just a moment.
Oh, it's been set.
Oh.
Yeah, for almost like an hour now. If the sun sets at like
Oh.
4, 4:30 here, if the sky is
Oh,
clear.
'cause the mountains and stuff like that.
Well, there are some hills there, yeah, but it
Yeah.
sets real early.
Okay. Well, shoot. I look forward to talking about the next film that we decide on, and we'll give a heads up on our Instagram and Facebook on like what our next one will be like. But yeah, so Star Wars, still say check it out. Kyle and I agree about a 5.5 overall, but still brought out the kid in both of us. And even though it sounded like, we were ragging on it, it's still Star Wars. It's still amazing. But with that, guys, just wanted to say thank you for listening. If this is your first time listening to the Cinepile podcast, thank you for being a first-time listener. If you've been listening to us for a long time, also thank you. If you want to check out how to get in touch with us or to see what kind of content that we have coming up next, you can follow us on Instagram. Is really great. You can follow us at our handle at Cinepile Pod. That's CinePilePod. To get kind of any updates, we also do like fun screen grabs from films that we think are really great that we don't have enough time to talk about on the podcast itself. If you are listening to this, feel free to just give us a like, give us a comment. If you're on iTunes, it does help us out a bunch if you write us a review. And in turn, if you write us a review, we'll read your review online. And if you drop what kind of film that you feel like we should review, we will review that film on our podcast for you. But also, if you want to support the podcast, you can see that there is a Bitcoin and Ethereum address. If you don't want to support the podcast through cryptocurrencies or anything like that, that's totally fine. Giving us a thumbs up online is just as easy. But yeah, appreciate it, guys. And remember, every single Friday, 8 a.m., new Cinepile podcast episode. Thank you so much, and stay tuned.